Hi, hello. We have another jam-packed episode of the Dunker Spot ready for you. First, we start with the WNBA Finals. The Aces with a 3-0 lead. Will they finish the job, or will the Phoenix Mercury, without Satu Sabally, get well soon, Satu? Will the Mercury find a way to extend this series? We talk about what happened in Game 3 and what to expect in Game 4. And then, on the NBA side, we continue our division previews. We go with the Southeast. If you are a fan of the Magic, the Hawks, the Heat, the Hornets, or the Wizards, this pod specifically is for you. We've got thoughts, X factors, questions, players we're excited about, etc. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Friday. How are you?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias, it is time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. Currently live from an undisclosed location in Phoenix, Arizona. And my weekend kind of in peril, as I will either be going to Vegas or going home tomorrow. So we will see what happens later tonight as the Aces take on the Mercury. The Aces with it. Don't do that. The Aces with a 3-0 series lead following their 90-88 victory on Wednesday night. It looked like it was going to be a convincing win, Steve. And then Kalia Copper happened. And then DeWanna Bonner kept happening. And then Asia Wilson happened to cap off a 34-14 night for her. Game-winning basket with 0.3 seconds left. They go to a little lob to DeWanna Bonner at the end. Couldn't get it to go, though it was incredibly close. And now here we are with the Aces one win away from their third championship in 4 years. The Phoenix Mercury, obvious backs on the wall, heading into a win or stay home game now a little bit later tonight. And I think for me, I was fascinated, just thinking through his game three, I was fascinated by what these teams tried to do to each other defensively, with the Mercury switching their matchups. It's something that we talked a little bit about on the last episode about potential adjustments. They flipped the matchups. Steve, I asked you specifically, hey, do you think they want to go with Natasha Mack on Asia and use AT either on one of the guards or as a roamer? And you said, I don't think they should get too cute with that. And they flipped the matchups, and Asia has 34-14 and had the most touches in the game that she had all postseason.
Hold on. I don't mean to cut you off, but immediately Asia Wilson was excited to see Natasha Mack on her. Early in that first quarter, very comfortable. Let's go a little pick and roll, get a short roll, get a little jab and J. Let me pick and pop to empty side, hit a three. I'm in rhythm. And this means you're in danger. This is why I did not want Phoenix to automatically start to toggle that. And now, okay, you're trying to cycle Natasha Mack. Now it's DeWanna Bonner on Asia Wilson. And now you're searching and grasping for straws. And that's not what you want in a game three, a pivotal game three. And the MVP is comfy.
That's a bar. Great work, Steve. That's good stuff. But yo, you pretty much nailed it. And like, even in the midst of our conversation, and I've been talking to media members, you know, here during the series, I'm just like, if you're going to take AT off of Asia, I want AT as a roamer. I want her mucking up all of the Asia touches if you are going to do that. That's why I was pretty consistent with keep her on Asia, but if not, put her on Alyssa Smith. Put her on insert non-threatening shooter here so you can unlock that portion of Alyssa Thomas. Instead, you get Alyssa Thomas on Chelsea Gray to start the game, which was what they went to in that first August matchup between the two teams. And I felt like the Aces did a good job of moving her around. What you got, Steve?
Well, if you're going to roll the dice, why not put AT on Jackie Young?
That's what, yeah.
Chelsea Gray is, I mean, it's not, I understand the logic. Alyssa Thomas is going to be able to navigate pick and roll. The different things will happen, but you're not switching. So there's a gap. Chelsea Gray's a great passer. And that's not going to deter Chelsea Gray from taking or taking whatever Chelsea Gray shots she wants to or making whatever Chelsea Gray passes she wants to. So that's where I'm like, I get it, but also, did you harm the Aces? And I think that was the tricky part about that first quarter. And it kind of ties back into what I said on the previous pod. The Aces can smell it.
Mm-hmm.
They can see it. They can taste it. And so you are in a scenario as Phoenix where you are playing the series, right? Mm-hmm. We're trying to make the adjustments to get back in the series. We're trying to figure out how to adjust from what happened in game one and game two and get ourselves back in the series. The Aces are sprinting. The finish line is here. Do you know what we've been through to get to this moment? And I can see it now. Mm-hmm. And so you run the risk of opening different doors, and then you look up. Ace made 5 threes in the first quarter. Jrue Lloyd made 4 threes in the first quarter. Don't even think Jrue Lloyd made another three the rest of the game. Didn't matter. Timely baskets mean so much in a playoff series, in a final series, in an elimination scenario. And you just open too many doors when you don't necessarily put a team in a position that they need to be put down, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And I think even to the AT of it all, like, we did see more of her on Jackie Young once the Aces went to their smaller lineups. But to your point, no, I want to cut the head off of the Jackie Asia pick and roll if I'm going to try to take that particular action away from the Aces. This is something that you, Steve, have been consistent on. Like, hey, how have you felt about the Aces pick and roll in game two? How have you felt about, do you feel like they're getting better at this? Do you feel like they're getting more comfortable? You just have to, like, the matchup toggling for me is not a problem. You have to maximize your matchup toggling if you're going to go to that. And it just felt like they left some things on the table. And this is where you get, you know, the first three quarters of the game at the very least for the Aces, where they end up going up as much as 17 in the game. Just like, ooh, well, this is kind of tough. This is what you want. And it was a weird thing for me to witness in person because I'm looking at them toggling, Phoenix toggling the matchups. Then once again, toggling their offensive approach, it felt a lot closer to game one with some of the interior shots, touches, some of the mismatch hunting that they went to, particularly off the ball. I was like, this doesn't feel like a bad game plan from Nate Tibbetts. Like, I understand what he's trying to get to. They're executing, at least in that first half. Like, the three-point shot making wasn't there for Phoenix. But I'm just like, a lot of those misses were coming off of, like, good process possessions for me. But as you mentioned, Jrue Lloyd, 12 in the first quarter. Asia had 10 in the first quarter. You get to the second quarter here. Well, here comes Jackie Young now. Just like, oh, no. And as you always say when it comes to playoff time, especially once you get closer to closeout games, we don't have to be like the A-plus versions of ourselves. We just need stuff. But you got the Dane Evans game in game one. You got Jackie and Asia in game two. You got Asia and Jackie in game three. And now in game four, let's say Phoenix toggles the matchups again. Let's say they do actually stick with AT not on Asia, but they put her on Jackie full time now. What if this becomes Chelsea Gray now finally has one of the shot making games that she just has not had in the series to this point? And now she just sprinkles in 6 mid-range jumpers over Monika Koamakani or someone else. And it's like, well, darn, what do we do now? What if this is the 12-10 game from Nelissa Smith? Hasn't been a good series for her, but like, what if she now offensive rebounds, get some cuts? It's just like, oh no.
Now, hold on. Nelissa Smith been working defensively. Hey, but hold on, easy. We got some people to talk about in this series. We're going to get to it. Don't worry about it. What I would say is if you go back to the game three, the end of the second quarter was massive for both teams in the sense that the Mercury had scrapped and battled and fought and pushed their way back to a three-point game. The Aces respond and push that lead back, and now you're like, what do we need to do? Or what are we searching for? How do we get here? I think it's going to be very interesting to see how Phoenix wants to try and approach, because you got to throw everything out there. So are you going to double Asia Wilson and just say, you know what, as opposed to our strategy of saying you're going to get yours, we have to live with this, do we just try and take you away and make everyone else beat us? How are we going to make sure we kind of poke at the right things on the other end of the floor to try and open things up? Because the Aces have stayed and remained decisive defensively with how they want to cover different actions. So there's no one thing that's truly poking or making them kind of uneasy or feel pressure. There are moments where they got Alyssa Thomas rolling, but the weak side was actually in and helping. So they're not going to be able to rely specifically on one thing. They're going to have to go make plays. But I think for Phoenix, they're going to have to get their defense going to get this going and try and get a flow and make it work. For the Aces, Asia Wilson has put so much pressure on Phoenix because they have not had an answer for her. And so that's a big difference. Like, we saw a little bit of it from Nafisa Collier in the Mercury Link series before she got hurt. We saw a little bit from Kayla Bryant. We saw a little bit from Stewie at the end of the Liberty series. But the Aces having the ever-present Asia Wilson scoring, something we can go to every single time, something that can kind of steady us in these moments where maybe things aren't going great, maybe they're on a run, that's what's been the separation to me. Jackie Young obviously making big plays as well. But that's something that they can just rely on and say, okay, we settled, we're good, we know we can get a bucket, let's get our defense back right, let's make another push, let's make another run. And they've grown more and more comfortable throughout the series.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, it feels simplistic for me to say, hey, the Mercury don't have an answer for Asia Wilson because she is the best player in the world for a reason. Like, not many teams have answers for someone like that. But to your point, she gets the AT matchup early on. And you remember, we talked about this in the preview. I'm just like, AT is better than Aaliyah Boston. But in terms of like a styles make fights type of matchup, some of these one-on-ones, I think Asia could just get to her shot more comfortably against AT. And like, that has largely been the case, at least through the first two games. And if you are taking AT off, like, okay, where is you at? Like, one of the things that I enjoyed and I ended up writing about it was the fact that the Aces were, at least I felt, they were pretty intentional about moving Chelsea Gray around. If Alyssa Thomas is going to get this matchup, all right, cool, we're going to space you two passes away. So if you want to be the one to come with this double team, you got a long way to go. And if you don't come with this double team, this is now Asia Wilson working one-on-one against DeWanna Bonner, or insert defender here. And so that's where I'm just kind of like, ooh, I wonder if they do press the double team button just to try to take her off the table. Because otherwise, she has answers and counters for any individual defender that you have. And that's a scary place to be if you're the Phoenix Mercury. And like, hovering over all of this, and I should have said this at the very top, this is bad podcast on my end, they're now entering this game four and potentially the rest of the series without Satu Sabally, who took a scary bump towards the middle of the fourth quarter in game three, diagnosed with a concussion. And while I don't think this has been a great defensive series for Satu, there is still just an element of size that they don't have now. So if you do want to double team, not having someone 6'3 or 6'4 on the back end, that could complicate some things for the Mercury defense. Or even as simple as when the Aces go to their smaller lineups, it has been a lot of like DeWanna Bonner, if she's on Asia, then that is Satu taking on like Dana Evans. They have almost exclusively put length on Dana after that game one. Now without Satu, do the Aces now have two guards that they could use as off-ball screeners for Asia to complicate things for Phoenix's defense? So like the Satu of it all, first and foremost, I just hope she's okay. Concussions are scary. That entire sequence was scary to see happen in real time. I do not know enough about protocol to like give some kind of scathing review about how she was helped off the court versus like stretcher or wheelchair or whatever. But like, I was uncomfortable in the moment. And in hindsight, now that we know it's a concussion, I'm just like, ooh, I wish she had a little bit more stability leaving the floor. But either way, I hope she's okay. But I don't know. Does this just become a blitz and double team game for Phoenix and just leave it all out there? I'm curious to see what the approach is going to be.
Oh, it's everything out the bag, throw it on the table. We're trying everything we can to try and figure out how to get a win in front of our home crowd and extend this series. I do hope Satu is okay. Very scary. So I hope she's good. But they're going to need even more DeWanna Bonner, who I thought had a really great game three.
25-2.
They're going to need Sammy. They're going to need Kat Westbelt. I'm intrigued to see the combination they're trying to throw out there. Who emerges maybe from the bench? Is it Lexi Heldtime? What do they try and tap there? It's going to be tough, but, Kalia Copper almost turned this into a win for the Phoenix Mercury, and they're not going to go away very easily. So, the Aces got to be locked in knowing they can get a championship, smelling the champagne. Mercury, it's win or go home. Very quickly, though, if I could just pivot, right? I'll pivot twice. One, they got to figure out a way to get Natasha Mack to be effective because the Aces have played her off the court, just with how they're defending her and attacking her. Number two, Megan Gustafson, huh?
Let me tell you, Steve.
5 minutes and 45 seconds in the fourth quarter of effort and defense. And I want you to acknowledge Megan Gustafson, because you know what? And acknowledge Becky Hammon, because Megan Gustafson was trying, giving her best effort. Guarding DeWanna Bonner, the problem for Megan Gustafson is effort's there. Sometimes the feet aren't there. You slide. A little bit too far one way, you can't get back in front. DeWanna Bonner goes left, gets fouled. Becky Hammon's like, hey, can you please come sit next to me? Doesn't go great. Guess who's back in the game? Megan Gustafson. Guess who gets the stop? Switch on Alyssa Thomas. Contain, contest. Let's go. Who sets the screen on the Asia Wolves? Megan Gustafson. So put some respect on her name.
I will put respect on the name of Megan Gustafson for the stop against Alyssa Thomas and for the off-ball screen for Jackie Young during the Asia Wilson basket. I will absolutely do that.
Wait, did you dilute it to the two plays I just described? That's insane. Come on, man.
No, I do appreciate the overall effort, and I think those two plays in particular highlight the effort and the actual productivity, the positive results of that effort. So I will give her that. Where I will not even push back, but where I will pivot, if you will. I, in real time, was confused. Like, this is prior to the stop that she got against AT. But I was like, hey, there have been some stoppages here. Do the Aces not want to go Kirsten Bell again? Do you want to go Kia Stokes,
who we
have evidence in the series can just come in cold and switch and get stops for you? I was concerned. I was confused. I was like, hey, they are, as we've talked about with the Mercury, if they find something they like, 1A, 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 they're going to spam it. And it was just a whole lot of DeWanna Bonner. And I was like, ooh, Meg's trying her best, but Meg cannot hang out here. This is getting kind of scary. Until, and this is where I will offer a light criticism of the Phoenix Mercury. I think, you know, Nate Tibbetts talked post-game, like, we're not calling timeout because Megan Gustav is on the floor and we like that matchup, right? I think going to DeWanna Bonner, who, as you mentioned, Steve, was having a tremendous game and was making big plays in that fourth quarter, that makes sense. Asia Wilson is defending Alyssa Thomas. Jackie Young, who is a very good defender in her own right when she's locked in, is smaller than Asia Wilson, not as good of a defender as Asia Wilson, and she is defending Kalia Copper, who just ripped off 11 points in a minute and a half. I would have liked some Colin DeWanna action to close out the game.
Here you go with process, man.
Which I'm just saying, because my thing is, because the Aces own that crucial Megan Gustafson stop. They switch the pick and roll because it's just two, quote unquote, two bigs in action together. And so you get Meg switched on to AT, and she does a good job of containing and contesting the drive. If this is DeWanna and Ka, the Aces may still choose to switch that. And now it is Meg Gustafson dealing with a drive from Kalia Copper. And I think it is fair to argue that Ka is a better driver and finisher than AT is, especially considering what we had literally seen from Ka in the quarter.
This is playing the results. This is playing the result. I'm going to tell you why, right? Very quickly. Okay. How can you at the one time be concerned that Megan Gustafson is on the court, have a coach recognize, hey, Megan Gustafson is on the court, and then be upset with Megan Gustafson's matchup plus our best player in action together? the math is not mathing to your boy.
Why is the math not mathing? I think, yes, there's obvious value to having your best player involved. You're also involving the other team's best player, who is your co-depoy, and you have another star on the court with you that is having a tremendous quarter. That's where it shifts for me. Like, in general, like, this is why I'm not even saying, like, I'm mad at AT having the ball. Like, she is their best player. She's a good decision maker. Like, that drive is unfortunate, and Megan Gustafson deserves praise for stopping it. So it's less about that. It's more, even the possession prior, the Aces were kind of switching across those two, across that matchup. And so I'm just like, Ka just didn't touch the ball for what felt like the last 2 or 3 minutes of the game. That's where I'm just like, can we get Ka involved in some kind of way? Even if it flows back to AT going second side or something and the ball goes back to DeWanna or AT has that drive, it was just immediate Ka to corner stand is where I'm just like, I don't know. I feel like there's more meat on the bone versus this sucked. What are you doing? I hope that makes sense.
No, you're good. Ka took the heat check three at 216 and then Nate Tibbetts pivoted. And I think you got to remember the possession before, they did get two on the ball. Now, DeWanna couldn't find AT on the roll, but they did get two. Asia eventually late switched. So, I mean, if you're a coach, you're saying, hey, we got something that you don't like and enjoy. Let's poke at it. And that's where you salute to Becky Hammon and Megan Gustafson. Just switch it. Switch it and get a stop. And now, you know, instead of putting two on the ball and DeWanna Bonner going to the line or whatever, we just get a stop.
Yeah. And I'd also say it's like, to that point, part of the logic of let's go with this action, we like what we get. If you do get Asia switched out on the perimeter, that means she is not protecting the rim. So, like, there's also that aspect of it, too. So, again, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. It's more, I would have liked to seen Ka involved if this is how the Aces were going to play it. Because I think you may have gotten a more fruitful drive out of that. But again, that's very much just tough. And ultimately, for the Aces side, they probably shouldn't have been in that position to begin with, considering the lead they had built up through the first three quarters. And their offense just effectively died for like 6.5, 7 minutes. And so the fact that we're even talking about late game process for Phoenix is both a testament to their collective competitiveness. Kalia Copper, big plays. Dewana Bonner, big plays. And also, like, hey, Vegas, you can't really afford to go cold on the road. Like, the funny thing about this, Steven, that we can pivot, was literally sitting with a media member. Like, early in the fourth quarter, I literally said to said media member, the only goal for the Aces is for this to not be a repeat of game 2 against Seattle. And so imagine how I felt watching that fourth quarter go on. And I was like, you have got to be kidding me. But okay, that is that. Game 4 later on tonight, we will see if the Mercury are able to extend the series or if this is truly a losing stay home game for them. The Aces once again on the brink of their third championship in 4 years. All right, last thing on the W front before we pivot to another NBA division preview. We have finally, Steve, after a week plus, we have finally gotten the reveal of the all defensive teams. On your first team, Asia Wilson and Alanna Smith, your co-defensive player of the years. Alyssa Thomas, Nafisa Collier, Gabby Williams. There's your first team. On the second team, Veronica Burton, Ryan Howard, Brianna Stewart, Ezzie Matt-Bagore, and Aaliyah Boston. Any surprises, any complaints? How did you feel about the all-defense teams?
No, two thumbs up. I think the voters got it right. I think everyone here deserved to be recognized. I thought you had some really good defensive campaigns. I like that Veronica Burton and Ryan Howard got recognized for their defensive efforts. Respect guard and wing defense. Didn't have to just be bigs, but they nailed it. You know, I got no complaints. 10 out of 10 for me. What about you, sir?
the smile is killing me. No real complaints for me. As I end up tweeting, because I revealed my fake ballot. I don't have an official awards ballot. I went 9 for 10. The only change on my second team, I had Monika Koamakani instead of Aaliyah Boston. But Aaliyah Boston was on the short list for me, as was Alicia Gray, who also had an argument for this. So for me, I have no qualms. Like, the first team made a ton of sense. The overall second team made a lot of sense. I do think, in general, and the all WNBA teams are expected to be released later today, so that'll be post-recording. We'll get to that next week. But I think with Aaliyah getting highlighted, it further shines a light on the underrated nature of her season, it would appear. And so hopefully she also adds an all W second team selection to her belt. But I thought she was really good defensively for Indiana this year. So it was cool to see her get recognized, even though, again, I would have went Monique. But either way, like, that's good choices. I don't have complaints. I don't have a rant for you this year, Steve. I may have had a rant if, in addition to the actual team announcement, we would have got, like, the voting tallies, like we normally do. We have not gotten those yet, which is kind of interesting, but that's neither here nor there. But the 10's good, so I am good. And after this break, we will shift to the NBA side of the pod, and we will start previewing the Southeast Division. And we are back. Steve, it is now time to hop to the NBA side. It's time to talk about a division near and dear and also frustrating to my heart, the Southeast Division. We start with the Orlando Magic. I heard they were a bit busy this offseason with the acquisition of Desmond Bane, but coming off of last season, 41-41 injury-riddled campaign, 27th in offense, 2nd in defense, 17th in net rating, pretty much neutral on that front. Steve, I'll pose the question to you, because I know I'll yap on this. What excites you the most about this Orlando team heading into the year?
The potential evolution offensively. I think Orlando has shown they have a base, they have a formula. Defense is at the core of it. We've seen the growth and improvement from Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner. It's kind of a unique team because the skill set of Paolo and Franz allows them to have the ball in their hands, do some different things, attack in different ways. But they've kind of gotten stagnant at different times, not been able to kind of keep pressure on teams, not be able to consistently execute in the half court at times. comfortable grinding, but not necessarily exactly what you want. I think having Desmond Bain should allow them to have more movement. I think what you've seen from Orlando, at least in the preseason, is just the idea that we probably need to make quicker decisions offensively. We need to generate some type of movement. Desmond Bain flying off screens is very helpful. But you kind of see, even when Paolo has the ball up top, looking to attack one-on-one, you know, we've seen the lull. You got one side trying to set a pin down. You got another side exchanging. We're trying to move the defense around at least a little bit. We're trying to go side to side a little bit more. And so can they kind of have more juice in the half court offensively on top of just natural improvement from Paolo, more Franz Wagner, and then Desmond Bane being able to help them? Obviously, when Jalen Suggs get healthy, that's pretty good core. But what does that look like when the offense hits a little bit different level and they can still get after you defensively and make it hard for you to score and rotate and fly around? That's what I'm excited to see. Can Orlando kind of piece it all together? Because they made this move to make a leap. And this is the Eastern Conference, where don't put an L in front of Eastern. Understand there's a lot of opportunity for a team to make a run. And Orlando's got to be primed and ready for this one.
Yeah, we are very much aligned. The offense has kind of been, it's been the thorn in the side of the Orlando Magic for a very long time. Zach Lowe talks about the streak of finishing the bottom 10 offensive rating for like a decade plus at this point. They should be better than that with growth from Paolo, growth from Franz, the addition of Desmond Bane. And I'm so glad you hit on the off-ball movement portion from preseason, because that was the one thing I wanted to hit on as well. Just, I love the fact that there is more decoy stuff happening, more off-ball action, more movement in general to make the drives easier for Paolo, for Franz, because we know they can get downhill. And in the case of Paolo in particular, we know we can get downhill and get to the free throw line pretty much whenever you want to. And so a quick decision-making Paolo with space is a terrifying thought. And then you add on the continuing growth as a playmaker from him that you've talked a lot about, I've talked about over the past year and a half. It just becomes more difficult to deal with Orlando in the half court. And so I'm excited to see what that portion is going to look like. I am also excited to see just the return of Jalen Suggs, Steve. I think a big part of the Orlando Magic not necessarily hitting their expectations, again, a lot of injuries. Paolo missed time, Franz missed time, everybody had like obliques. It was very odd. But Jalen Suggs hurt for a large portion of last season. This is one of the best guard defenders on the planet. So you get that early value there. He's been a big reason why the Orlando Magic have been the elite defense since he's been there and in the rotation. But what caught my eye early on last season was not only is Jalen Suggs now shooting well from three, he's doing so with volume. He's doing so from depth. He's doing so against contests. And it's just like, you don't need him to be traditional point guard. Like, it'd be nice for him to be able to initiate some stuff, unlock Franz or Paolo as a roller, especially with teams switching a bunch against Orlando. Like, you want to have that value. But it's, if he could just play off of the attention that Franz and Paolo generate, knock down kid to shoot threes at a high clip, and then you got to deal with him on the other end, that's a scary trio. And that's before adding in now that you have Desmond Bane, that he could also play off of, who he could screen for off the ball if necessary, or just feed Desmond Bane some matchups. Even if it's as simple as we're going to run this fake guard pick and roll to get a switch, and now it is Desmond Bane, Paolo pick and roll, or Desmond Bane, Wendell Carter Jr. pick and roll, whatever you want to do. I'm really excited to watch Jalen Suggs play basketball again and throw his name back into the all-defense conversation, in addition to what you've already said about the overall evolution of this Orlando offense. So I'm here for it. What is your biggest question about the Orlando Magic heading into the year?
What happens if the offense doesn't hit?
Yeah.
What's that look like? Are you prepared for that? Are you going to be able to stick with it? Because here's the thing. When you're a defensive-minded team and you know you have to improve offensively and you try and put these changes in, are you sacrificing a little bit of your defense? Are you putting yourself in a position where you go from second to seventh in defense, or you start slow defensively? Does that impact you? Even if you have the offensive changes, does your defense slip a little bit? How do you navigate the season? How do you piece it all together? Because it's one thing to have a formula. You still have to get to it. So that's probably my number one thing. How much production can we get from our bench? I think this is a year where they can get – it's time for some young guys to cash in a little bit. I like the addition of Tyus Jones, but Anthony Black, what do we got? Jace Richardson, what do we got? Jet Howard, what do we got? Tristan Da Silva, how much do we have? they're going to need some of those guys to emerge consistently within what they do and keep pressure on teams. Now, obviously, they can mix and match. This is the beauty of having the core four that they have. You can mix and match people and keep talent on the floor. So it's not like there's all the pressures on those guys, but they're going to have to produce to kind of have the havoc that the Magic can cause. So those are probably my question marks. Do you find yourself in a scenario where your offense is better, your defense is worse, and can you find consistent production throughout your lineups?
No, I think that's fair. I think within the offensive context, what I had in my notes is like, what kind of leap do we see from the stars in particular? Like, I think the early returns from Paolo and Franz have been good in the preseason. And if you want to zoom out to just Eurobasket play, good Lord, Franz. And so I am optimistic ultimately, but it does have to carry into the regular season. And so is this another year where Franz is shooting between 29 and 31% from three? And if so, how does that affect how teams guard him, especially once you get into the postseason? For Paolo, early returns have been good with quick decision-making, the passing. We know what kind of driver he is. Do any of those habits revert? And overall, like, what is the shot profile going to be for him? And so for me, again, I am optimistic that both of them make those kind of leaps because I am high on Orlando this year. But it is, I think, fair to at least question, hey, they do have to do it. They do have to sustain it in this case. And so, like, I am keeping a close eye on those two naturally. And then beyond that, I'm glad you hit on the bench because we're about to flow into X factors. The Tristan Da Silva of it all is really interesting to me. This has been quite the summer for him, if you want to go back to and put grains of salt in the summer league reps, where he's like initiating pick and roll and he's just overall more aggressive and getting more touches funneled his way. Like, I think they really want him to hit in that 3-4 room for Orlando this year, especially in light of some of the departures. I am a little concerned about Jonathan Isaac. Don't know which version we're going to get from him. Because, like, last year, like, more injuries. But, like, last year, he really bulked up. It felt like, hey, I'm going to be playing more five this year. And he bulked up. But, like, that hit some of the mobility. And that was kind of odd. And, like, now he's kind of dropped some of that weight. And he's trying to get himself back together. So, like, I don't know if we get, you know, going back 2 years ago where you could argue on a per minute or a per possession basis, this is the best defender in basketball. He's just only playing 18 minutes. So you can't, like, argue for deep or anything. But when he's on the floor, he's that. I don't know how close to that version of Jonathan Isaac we get this year. And if we don't get that version, that should, in theory, open up a window for more Tristan Da Silva in that room or just with the staggering in general. Like, as you mentioned, like, you can still just go like Paolo at the four with hybrid second unit, et cetera. So, like, I think this is an interesting opportunity for Tristan. If he can knock down shots, we already know, like, he's a good cutter, a good screener. He's going to compete defensively and has the size to defend multiple positions at the very least. He has a real opportunity. And so I echo your overall bench point because they have young guys to step up. And I just wanted to quickly highlight, this could be a year for Tristan.
I mean, I think they clearly are in on Tristan Da Silva. And I think part of it is the potential he has, but also what they value. Hey, you're tall. You can kind of put the ball on the ground. Do stuff. So within the context of having a Paolo, having a Franz, hey, you kind of do some of that stuff. Let's do this. Come, bring it up. Mm-hmm. Attack or close out. Do things. So I think he's going to be a big part of it. I guess for me, and it kind of flows into the X-Factor talk, but hey, can Wendell Carter Jr. elevate?
Yeah.
It's not that he's not good at basketball. Can he take another step to help the Magic reach their goals? It could be defensively. It could be knocking down more shots. Whatever it is there more in there? I think it's probably, for me, a lot of, like, my eyes are on Anthony Black and Jet Howard. Those are my S factors. Sorry for the spoiler. I've liked a lot of what we've seen from Anthony Black when he's played. Can we get it consistently? Can we continue the confidence? Can the defense show up? What does Jet Howard look like? Does his shooting pop for Orlando? How does that change them? That's where I'm at with the X factors for Orlando.
Okay. I think it's fair. And it's kind of flowing from there. Like I already mentioned, the Jonathan Isaac of it all. Tyus Jones is intriguing to me in this context. Caretaker helped get the turnover rate down. someone that at the very least can knock down corner threes for you. I was having this conversation with our dear pal Steven about this the other day, but can knock down corner threes at the very least should be able to play off of whoever he's going to be staggered with, whether that is Paolo or Franz with some of those hybrid units. He should take some of the ball handling responsibility off of them, can get them in the spots, can also knock down spot ups. He has to hold up defensively for sure. But in theory, this is a better context for him defensively than where he's coming from, respectfully. So it should be a little bit easier. A good Tyus Jones year could help enhance the stars, can help solidify that second unit, and bouncing off what you said, Steve, about just wanting more consistency from Anthony Black. If this is a year where he's not shooting well from three slashes and getting guarded, if there's any kind of inconsistency defensively, okay, we can go from just throwing out numbers in this case. We can go from 19 minutes a game to 15 minutes or 14 minutes. We can give Tyus a little bit more and feel good about what's happening once, you know, Jalen Suggs goes to the bench or whoever he's coming in for. And so, like, I think that's going to be important. And I think related to, I guess, the veteran portion of the bench, just what is Mo Wagner going to look like this year coming off of the injury? Because he was a world destroyer as a second unit big last year. And I guess that also just kind of throws Goga Batata in this as well. But, like, I'm intrigued. I once again echo your sentiments. The second unit for Orlando, this is going to be really interesting. But those are the names that I'll highlight in particular. What do you think Orlando's best lineup is going to be?
I think it's their starting lineup.
Okay.
Jalen Suggs, Desmond Bane, Franz Wagner, Paolo Banchero, Wendell Carter Jr. That has to hit at a high level, in my opinion. You?
I feel. I'm right there with you. Well, I had two because I always have two when it comes to these kind of things. But I
Is this second one their best lineup or the lineup you want to see? Or is it a combination of both?
In this case, it's I have two in the best lineup, and I also have a different one for the lineup I want to see.
How many lineups do you have?
Three in total.
Okay.
So I have that. I have the starting lineup, and I'll quickly say to your window point, I also think he's good at basketball. I just want to know what the thing is for him is kind of where I'm at with him now. Because he could do a lot, but you never know from game to game what exactly is going to pop consistently.
It's about to be rebounds.
That would be helpful. That would certainly be helpful. But I have a starting lineup. But I did also have in my notes that historically, during this Paolo Franz era, the Franz-led second units are always just plus-minus monsters. And, like, looking at over the past 2 years, the Magic, I think, plus 10.5 net rating in over 1,000 minutes with Franz on the floor without Paolo. So, like, in the literal sense of best lineup, it's probably going to be a Franz plus bench group. So I was trying to like get that together. I tossed out Tyus Jones, Anthony Black, Desmond Bane, Franz Wagner, Mo Wagner as my group there that I'm keeping an eye on. So like it wouldn't surprise me if that actually ends up being like minimum 200 minutes. This is the one, right? But as we flow into the lineup I want to see, I will once again do the thing, Steve. Paolo at the five. Tyus, Suggs, Bane, Franz, Paolo. I want to see it. We may only get like 70 minutes of it all year, but I want to see what it looks like.
You're gonna see Tyus Jones in action. What you mean?
Sure will. Trust the size, trust the activity, but that's the one I want to see. What say you?
I'm noticing the small ball love coming from Nikias this year. give me Jalen Suggs, Desmond Bane, Tristan Da Silva, Franz Wagner, Paolo Banchero.
Ooh.
Let's get active. Let's play some defense. Let's attack on the other end.
No respect to true point guards, to real point guards, traditional point guards. That's kind of tough, but that's all right.
Let me try this out real quick. No.
One, you are insane. Two, and I should have said this in the W section, shout out to Ryan Rucco. They got the double you bet for the Asia game winner. Unbelievable call getting to watch that one back on the broadcast. So quick shout out to Ryan. And with that, Steve, it's now time to transition to the Atlanta Hawks. Coming off of a 40-42 season, 17th in offense, 18th in defense, 18th in net rating. They also had a busy off season. And when it comes to excitement level, for me, very much on brand, we get healthy Jalen Johnson again, Steve. And I am excited to see him build off of what was looking like an all-star campaign last season before he went down. The drives, the playmaking, the overall athleticism, as Atlanta, at least last year, was more of a two-on-the-ball team defensively. Watching him take some legitimate steps as the low man, being in a little bit early, being in early more consistently, rather, that's helpful to making the whole team defense work. And obviously in transition, he's just an absolute monster. Want to see where the three-point shot's going to go. But if Jalen Johnson, one, remains healthy, and two, actually takes some steps as a creator and as a shooter, that makes me feel better about the non-Trey minutes. And ultimately, he's just going to be better and the Hawks are going to be better. So the obvious one is they got a whole lot of new pieces. I want to see how it fits. But within the context of Atlanta, I'm really excited to watch Jalen Johnson play basketball again. What excites you most about this Hawks group?
This is not shocking, and I'm surprised because you already had a Hawks rant earlier. So I'm intrigued to see how this goes. I guess for me with the Hawks, what does this look like? I know that sounds a little basic on the surface, but you are making these moves to push in the Eastern Conference. What is it built off of? You have more talent in the room. What is your identity? How are you building this out? Who plays with who? What is your weakness? How do you navigate through this season? So is the offense going to be at a high enough level early enough for this to kind of pay off to a degree? Is it going to be the defense that gets you in the end, where teams are putting Trae Young in action? Trae Young and Kristaps Porzingis have to defend pick and roll together. What does that look like? Do you have enough shooting when you go to some of these combinations? Excited about Nickeil Alexander-Walker. Excited about Luke Kennard. Excited about a lot of the defensive lineups they could throw out there. Because if you're going to tell me Jalen Johnson, Dyson Daniels, Nickeil Alexander-Walker and playing defense at the same time, Onyeka's out there, there's a lot of good things you can do. What happens on the other end? So are these going to be two-way lineups that you have? Or are you going to have lineups that are very good at defense and lineups that are very good at offense? Here's the Trae Young lineup. Here's the Jalen Johnson lineup. You know what I mean? Like, I think the combination of their starting five has a lot of talent, and they should have a lot of versatility. But are you going to be a team that plays with pace? Are you going to be a team that has movement in the half court? How does Quinn Snyder want to build this out? Because we've kind of seen different variations. They should have a lot of different players that can use the movement. They should be able to put a lot of different people in different places in action. Doesn't have to rely just on Trae Young and pick and roll, which is a positive for Atlanta. So if you are able to have things for Jalen Johnson, you're able to have things for Risha Shea, you're able to have Kristaps Porzingis pick and pop and attack switches and just open things up. There's different levers you can hit. When do they know what they are?
Yeah.
And how do they react when the league reacts? Because that's the secondary part. You got to put something on the table to make defenses think about it. But if I'm playing it against you, I'm sitting down at the coach's meeting, switch everything. Well, switch. Just switch everything. And then we'll take that off the table. Let's trap Trae Young. Like, how do they pivot? That's what I'm kind of monitoring. Because I think there's a lot of talent, a lot of opportunity in the East. But you know what? What's the ick? What is their ick? That's basically it. I need to know the Hawks' ick, and then we can navigate and move through.
Okay, you know what? That only you could frame it that way, and this is why you are the best of the best, but I think that's fair. Like, it's kind of a, feels like a mixture of excitement / question for you when it comes with the Hawks, because this is just, it's a new group. Like, Trey's still there, Zachary Richardson still there, James Johnson still there, and Onyeka still there, but like, it's a lot of important pieces being added to the puzzle. And so I'm too intrigued to see how it all flows together, which kind of flows into my biggest questions. Like, you've stepped all over them right there, so I won't hang too long. But for my me, bad. It's I appreciate that we are aligned with a lot of this through these previews. But in my notes, how good will the defense actually be? How will the team deal with switches? Can they create good shots without Trae on the floor? Those were my three. And so again, like, props to you, props to us in general. But it's going to be interesting to see like how that boat gets built out. Because like, to your lineup point, that's probably been the most exciting thing for me watching the Hawks so far in preseason. They can really get to some fun stuff with their like defensively slanted lineups. It's like, oh, this is a lot of ball pressure. This is a lot of early help. Because like, as you're an offense, I have to deal with like Nickeil Alexander-Walker pressuring me. What, one of my other good perimeter players on the wing? That means Dyson Daniels is guarding that person, and Dyson's just already at the free throw line. And it's just like, I could maybe make this pass, but Dyson might get there. I can't really drive because Dyson's already there. It's just like, oh, what do we do? Oh, let's have that guy cut from the wing to try to move Dyson. Dyson doesn't fall for it. Like, it's just, I'm excited to see those groups. As a quick tease as we get into the lineup stuff. But there is going to have to be a level of per-possession consistency that they need. Like, naturally, a lot of attention is going to be on Trae Young. What's going to be your effort level defensively. I will say over the last like year and a half, I've been less concerned with that piece. I know other people disagree with me on that front. That's okay. But like it's felt more consistent for him. But the size is kind of the size. So have the Hawks done a good enough job of insulating him with the talent that they added? I personally think the answer is yes, but they do have to prove it. So we'll see. And then just the non-trade units. Luke Kennard and movement, are they switching all those pin downs? Quinn Snyder runs some really fun stuff. I should just stop and start there, going back, even going to the Utah days. I don't doubt that with Trey off the floor, he can scheme up some stuff. But they are going to have to solve the switching problem. This is something that you talked about, in particular, Steve, last year. And so they're absolutely going to have to do it now. But I think the clipboard is a strong one for Quinn Snyder, so I'm curious to see what those looks are going to be. And from here, like I just want Onyeka Okongwu to be healthy. And I guess we can flow into X factors and things there, unless you had something else you wanted to add on the question front. Okay, well then, on that front, X factors for me, one, just because I haven't talked a lot about them so far in this section, what kind of step do we see from Zachary Richesay? This is more of whose breakout could change things for the Hawks more than the X factor. I think my X factor is just Onyeka Okongwu. But in terms of like breakout candidate, a stronger Zachary Richesay, who already shot the leather off the ball, particularly in the calendar year of 2025 for Atlanta last year. And that, I don't want to say it went under the radar. Like, I don't want to get too much into that kind of talk, but he was just really good for them the back half of the year. And so if you're telling me he can now access spots a little bit easier with a tighter handle and just more play strength, in addition to the shooting, and he's already tall, so even if you don't feel like he's a great defender yet, and I don't think he's great yet, that is just still length. Depending on how aggressive Atlanta wants to be defensively, that should help the infrastructure. He takes another step as a creator. They can lean even more into some fun lineups, have him at the four sometimes if they want to. If they want to size up and have him at the two in certain lineups, they can. Like, he could just be a skeleton key for them. So I'm excited to see what this year is going to be like for him. And again, in terms of the X factor, it's Onyeka. Got to stay healthy, but I think he is their most versatile front court defender. I think the way that the Hawks have experimented, like they've been running him off of exit screens the last 2 years to get him random corner threes, like that's been fun. But like, does he actually become 36% from three on 3.5 attempts, 4 attempts? Like, what does that look like? I don't know if that shifts the defense majorly, but like that could matter, especially if you're talking about him and Kristaps playing together in certain lineups. He's going to be a big piece of whatever flow in the half court that they have in the non-pick and roll division. A guy that can run delay action for you, that can flow on the handoffs, just in general reads the floor well. So he feels massively important to me for this Hawks group, Steve.
Understood. I am just going to go Nikhil Alexander Walker. I think if he, new fit, new context, does he feel a freedom offensively? Does that unlock some more consistently offensively? We know what he can do defensively. How many lineups does that open up for the Hawks? I think the better he is, the better off they will be. Porzingis, you've graduated from X Factor, but I'm intrigued to see
you gotta be good.
How you, I mean, because Boston found the thing for you. What is the thing for you in Atlanta? You know, are we replicating it? Washington, you found things there. Like, what are you finding in Atlanta? What does that look like? But it's Nikhil Alexander Walker for me.
Okay. I think that's fair. I guess related to that, Steve, what do you think Atlanta's best lineup is going to be?
Give me Trae Young, Nikhil Alexander Walker, Dyson Daniels, Jalen Johnson, Kristaps Porzingis.
Okay. I like it. I think best lineup for me, I think, is going to be Trae Young, Dyson Daniels, Nikhil Alexander Walker, Jalen Johnson, Onyeka Okongwu.
Okay.
What is the lineup you are most excited to see this year?
Let's get big.
Let's go.
Let's borrow from the New York Liberty. Trae Young, Dyson Daniels, Jalen Johnson, Kristaps Porzingis, and Onyeka Okongwu.
Okay.
Let's just, hey, Trae, there's size.
We got you, big dog. For me, Steve, I have to bring back the get a stop lineup, because as some of these offseason moves were announced, I ended up tweeting out, like, hey, there's 13.7 seconds left on the clock, Atlanta up two. You now have to score against a lineup featuring, and that lineup was Nikhil Alexander Walker, Dyson Daniels, Zachary Richesay, Jalen Johnson, Onyeka Okongwu. So all principle, I have to roll with that one on the podcast since I already tweeted it. We'll toss out like if they want to go with Mo Gay instead of Jalen Johnson, you could also do that. But the get a stop groups, because Quinn Snyder hasn't been afraid to go offense defense late in games since he's been in Atlanta. But those defensive groups are going to be an absolute blast. So I'm excited to see that one in particular. And just excited to get to some Hawks games this year, man. So make the drive down. Got to see what this team's going to be looking like. So I'm excited to make my hashtag return.
You got the townhome ready? All right, let's go.
The townhome is insane. But as I reel from that comment, we're going to take a quick break. But once we return, we will continue our preview of the Southeast Division. And we are back, and it is now time for Steve to bear with me as we talk about the Miami Heat coming off of a 37-45 year, 21st in offense, 9th in defense, 16th in net rating on the year. And I think my excitement level starts with Nikola Jokic, Steve. We talked a little bit about him on a previous episode as he got the 4-year, $62 million contract, and rightfully so. I think, again, low percentage of the cap on that deal, I think is going to be good. And it's, one, getting to see more of him, more starts, more minutes, et cetera. But it's also within the broader context of Miami's offensive emphasis that we've seen, you know, heard about during training camp and we've seen so far in preseason. They want to push the ball up the floor. They want to make quicker decisions. They want to play fast, quick inbounds and hit aheads after made shots. We just want to have, in general, more tempo and more pace in the half court. And Nikola Jokic, who has not only had the ball in his hands a lot, he's been bringing the ball up the floor a ton for this Heat group during preseason so far. He feels like a very important part to unlocking the pace that Spo and the Heat ultimately want to get to. And so seeing his playmaking, seeing the shooting when he is spaced, because he has historically been a very good three-point shooter. He pairs well with Bam Adebayo for that reason. More Jokic is just a faster Heat team. It's just something that I just have not really gotten to see in my lifetime, Steve.
I'm going to let you get that off. Go ahead.
Even if you're just looking at the general pace numbers, like I feel like they've been inside the top 15 once over the last decade. Like it's very much we want to move the ball side to side. It's very rarely an actual like up-tempo, we want to get this across with 21 on the clock. We want to get, you know, it's very rarely that for Spo. It's more like we just don't want the ball to stagnate, which, again, there's nothing wrong with that. But pace plus actual speed is very different for a Heat team under Eric Spoelstra. So I am excited to see how much of that they're actually able to sustain.
It's the unknown for me. Shout out to Cooper Moorhead displaying the quote from Eric Spoelstra. But what does the unknown look like? They're in different waters, Nikias. This is a team that knows they have to evolve and shift. But how do you do it? Where do you get it from? I think the emphasis on getting up and down that you mentioned is strong. I won't belabor it too much. But what does that look like consistently? And how do you consistently get to that? To me, in watching the preseason, I get it. I like the tempo. I like the movement. I like grabbing and go, throwing ahead. But you are going to need your defense to hit for that to be something you can rely on every night. Fantastic. I like the idea of making quicker decisions, not relying solely on cutting. But you are going to need drives to hit to be able to keep an advantage and keep things going. So for me, it's like, boy, they need the defense, they need the drives, they need Andrew Wiggins, and they need Norman Powell. And that's where I'm at right now. Obviously, Bam. But it's like they need that kind of base. Jokic is a great shout because what does he unlock with his unique skill set, with what Miami's trying to do? How does that open things up? I'm very intrigued. So that's where I'm like, how does this gel? You know, that's because this is not typically with Miami. We've been able to kind of sit here. We know what they're going to do. We know what's going to look like. Can they hit it? We don't have that this year. It's something different. They're trying something new and they're going to compete. We know that much, but how much of that is going to stick?
No, I think that's fair. And like that kind of transitioned to the biggest question I had, which is stated to, you know, typed plainly in my notes, how good will this actually be? Because like to your point, And, you know, just bouncing off my earlier point, like, I like that they're playing faster. I think without a true bona fide number one option, I draw two whenever I have the ball type player, they do have to lean more into player movement, body movement, ball movement to maximize whatever cracks they're able to generate against said defenses. And I think it's smart for them to push that the way they have. They've also tweeted, it felt like a lot more pure five out spacing for Miami, which is also interesting. Let's see if we can maximize some of these driving lanes. A secondary question I have related to that is how much are teams going to cooperate? Because you can set up in a five-out alignment. If teams are still cramping the paint because they don't trust some of your shooters, what does that really mean type beat? So, like, that also factors into the how good would this be. But the defense point is really an interesting one to me, Steve. As mentioned earlier, they were ninth in defense last year, which actually, can I get a quick, like, 20-second rant off before I flow right back into this? So the GM survey came out, I believe, yesterday. And Bam Adebayo, the head of what was surprisingly a top 10 defense last year, didn't get a singular vote for most versatile defender in the league. And I just don't understand what else he has to do. I want to stay within 20 seconds. So I'll leave it there. But we got to put some respect on Bam's name. But anyway, what's popped in preseason for me so far is it has been a ton of switching for Miami. It's not necessarily new overall, because they have been a switch-heavy team with Bam before. But one of the changes that's happened over the last year and a half is it has been more drop coverage for Bam. They've wanted him closer to the rim, etc. So seeing them lean back into this heavy switching style has been interesting to me. And to your overall point, Steve, they have to be able to contain drives. They have to be able to finish possessions if they are going to switch to this degree. If they're going to be trying to scram matchups out of there, they're going to have to be crisp with that. It's obviously preseason play right now, so they have time. But it hasn't always looked great. And they do need, you know, to echo your point, the defense to be at a certain level to really accentuate what they want to do offensively from a pace perspective. So how good is this going to be? How good is this going to be? And if it isn't good, and then I'll toss it back to you, how quickly are they prepared to pivot? Do we actually do we actually see some of the Andrew Wiggins talks? Because he's been linked to the Lakers, for example, for like 8 months at this point. Like, do they actually explore something like that? Do they look at some of the other vets on the roster and say, hey, let's see what this looks like? As of October 10th, we still haven't gotten firm word on if Tyler Hero, who is going to miss the beginning of the season as he recovers from surgery, still haven't gotten firm word on if he's getting an extension, what that's going to look like. Is he trying to get the max? Is he willing to take less? What did he want to do? Like, do we get a Hero decision if this goes left? Like, that's also in the back of my head. Steve, who are your breakout candidates or your X factors?
Well, I mean, Jovic is the guy for me. Obviously, Wiggins, Powell, they're Y factors, I guess, at this point. I am interested to see if Jaime Jaquez Jr. is able to bounce back and what that looks like for Miami with their needing of more drives, more pace, more tempo, and different lineups. So I'm probably going to land on Jaime. But I will mention very quickly, I don't know how much he plays, but I am very intrigued about the Simone Fontecchio of it all, and I'll leave it there.
Okay. I am so glad that you left this on the board for me. First, quickly, as Kristaps had graduated from X-Factor land for you, Bam has graduated from X-Factor land for me. Like, he's an all-star, all NBA talent. Stay healthy. Curious to see if he has another creation leap in him. The drives are going to be super important, especially if the Heat are going to continue to go five out, but we'll just toss that out very quickly. The answer is Khalil Ware, Steve. Oh. The answer to this question is Khalil Ware. Oh. And I have been cracking up all summer long with how this has been navigated from both sides. It is very clear to me that Eric Spoelstra was at least a little bit traumatized by the Hassan Whiteside experience, as was I. Anytime you are on record saying, I don't care about 18 and 13 if it doesn't impact winning, even if you're right, that is a wild, that's a wild thing to have on wax. But it is clear that Khalil Ware has a ton of potential. It is also clear that Eric Spoelstra is fed up by the inconsistency in which Khalil Ware does the quote unquote little things. The screens, the box outs, when he's rotating towards the rim, hunting block shots. He wants that cleaned up, and he wants it cleaned up immediately. I go back to the summer league, not necessarily rant, but innocuous question asked to Eric Spoelstra during Summer League. Just, hey, how have you felt about Khalil Ware? Like, what's he been like? What's the summer been like for him? And it's just three straight minutes of Eric Spoelstra talking about Khalil needing better habits. And I was just like, oh. And I'm sure the media that was there was like, I didn't think we were about to get all of this from Eric Spoelstra on Khalil Ware. But if he is able to nail the little things, if he is able to play with force consistently, and that's what we saw, particularly in the second half of like the Spurs preseason game, which, good Lord, Wemby as well, but and that's another division. We'll get to the Southwest soon. But if he's able to do that, one, it's not going to surprise me if he just ends up starting at some point again this year, if he's going to play that well, because he's going to demand that kind of playing time and that kind of attention. If he doesn't, this is no reporting. If he doesn't, I don't know how long he's going to be here, is kind of my feel. Like, there were already the rumblings about him potentially being included in the Kevin Durant stuff, and the Heat didn't really want to do that. If this is another year of, like, Khalil averages 17 and 10 per 36 minutes, and Eric Spoelstra hates 80% of those minutes because he's not actually doing anything but being around the ball, I don't know what appetite Spo's going to have for it. And so he just feels like such a, I was going to say skeleton key, I'm blanking on the word right now, but he feels like someone that can trigger a lot of change for Miami. Either positively, he forces his way into the starting lineup, him and Bam plays together, him and Jovic get good minutes, etc. Or you are the young piece we are moving to get something else or some things else in the room. So Khalil Ware is the answer for me. With that, Steve, what do you think Miami's best lineup is going to be?
Norm Powell, Andrew Wiggins, Jaime Jaquez, Nikola Jovic, Bam Adebayo.
Okay, okay. Best lineup for me. I think this is going to end up being a plus-minus monster. Don't know if it's going to be like a heavy minute group, but Drew Smith had one welcome back to having one heck of a preseason so far. But Drew Smith, Norm Powell, Andrew Wiggins, Nikola Jovic, Bam Adebayo. I think we do get to see a good bit of that early on while Tyler Hero recovers. Now, once he's healthy, we'll see. But that's where I go. What is the lineup you are most excited to see with this Heat group?
Let's be very annoying. Davion Mitchell, Drew Smith, Norman Powell, Andrew Wiggins, Bam Adebayo.
Ooh-wee, that's fun. Okay. I dig it. Lineup I most want to see, Steve. Davion Mitchell, Norm Powell, Andrew Wiggins, Nikola Jovic, Bam Adebayo. I think that does it for me. And I think just in general, like, didn't make my breakout slash X-Factor list. But hey, man, if Davion Mitchell is actually just going to be a good three-point shooter, I feel like that changes a good bit for that guard room in particular. And I think that plus the Heat just love Drew Smith, plus Norm Powell is there and he may end up getting an extension. Maybe that shifts the Tyler Hero conversation at some point. We will see. They obviously have to play well enough for that to matter, but Davion also seems pretty important in all of this, so I will just sprinkle that in there. But now, it is time to move to the Charlotte Hornets, Steve.
Oh, right.
Now, hold on. Now, why are you already signed?
Go ahead, buddy.
We can hang there real quick. What's the beef with with the Charlotte Hornets? I can't talk about the dear Charlotte Hornets.
Go ahead.
Steve never lets me live with the Hornets. But anyway, the Charlotte Hornets, coming off of a 19-63 season, they were 29th in offense, 24th in defense, 27th in net rating. And I think for me, I am most excited about the growth of the young backcourt, Steve. Hopefully a healthy season of LaMelo Ball. More inside the arc growth at the very least for Brandon Miller. And related to that, I'm just kind of high on Charlotte's draft class this year. Honestly, like, Duncan Nipple has already been very good in summer league. Early preseason tape is him shooting the leather off the ball. And here's this random cut. And here are these offensive rebounds because no one's tracking me. And because I'm cutting again, he just seems good. And as simplistic as it sounds, he just knows how to play basketball. And having a guy like that in the room for Charlotte seems very important. In addition to just the shooting of it all and the space that he can open up for Brandon Miller and LaMelo, I'm excited about that. I'm excited about that. So it's very much youth intensive for me. Big shocker for anyone that's been following the dunker spot for a long time. But yeah, I'm ready to see what this young group looks like. What say you, Steve?
Charles Lee loves defense. They gave effort. Do you have enough pieces offensively to create more movement, create more pressure? Brandon Miller, are you ready to take a step? Trey Mann, are you ready to continue being Allen Iverson?
Welcome back, Trey Mann.
What do you got? What's the next evolution for you? Or is it just this? I think those three probably got to drive it for the Hornets, and they got to figure out a culture of defense. I like to shout with the young players. I think Collins would be really good. Colin Sexton is going to compete, and that's going to be mm-hmm. interesting. So how much fun can they have, and can they build on the identity of defense and movement?
Good. I like it. I like it. With the LaMelo piece, been talking a lot about what do the floaters look like? How often does he get to the rim? What does the foul drawing attempts look like? Is he actually able to seek out contact in a smart way, or is he just kind of flailing a little bit? He's shown growth there. The next evolution of LaMelo Ball is going to be him being more threatening inside the arc. Has to be a better finisher. Has to be a better foul drawer. Because if so, the playmaking is going to be there. The deep pull-up shooting is going to be there. He's going to juice their offensive attack just with the pace that he plays at and some of the hit-aheads that he can get to. It's just, what does he look like in the half court? Can he continue to showcase growth? Because before he went down last year, you remember he had the stretch where he's just averaging 30 because of the three-point shooting and the growth that we saw from him inside the arc. So if that maintains, not even necessarily him averaging 30 this year, I'm not going to put that on him. But in general, if that growth carries over, that means quite a bit for the Charlotte Duke, I imagine. Biggest question for me, what is this defense going to look like? There's going to be an effort deal that I'm going to be tracking with LaMelo. Not necessarily Brandon Miller, but I do want to keep an eye on it. He got some tough assignments, particularly after some of the injuries Charlotte faced. Is he ready to take another step on that end? You do have Josh Green, Grant Williams in the room, but both of them hurt, so you haven't seen a ton of them yet. Like, when do they get back? And from there, like, which one of those guys cracked the rotation to a real degree? Is it going to be Josh Green? That would be my best guess. Take on those assignments. He can also juice the transition attack on the other end, but they're going to have to take a step. And that also takes me to the front court with them, where talked about Musa Diabate on the pod last year, Steve. Mason Plumlee is back. I'm kind of in on Ryan Kalkbrenner, at least as a concept, but like, I trust that the drop is going to be good. When he's asked to do other things, what is that going to look like? And even within the drop, how do the Hornets prepare for the depth of his drop when they're facing spacier bigs? Are they sending someone else from the wing so they can keep him lower on the floor? Are they going to be asking him to recover? And if so, what does the footwork look like on that front? They do have to solidify the center rotation to some degree. Because naturally, as much as I want to see better from LaMelo, Brandon Miller, et cetera, if their centers are getting beat up or out of position, like, they're just going to bleed points again. And so who pops from that room is going to be top of mind for me.
Respect Mason Plumlee.
I'd like to. Wiley Vet. You know, bring the reverse dunks back to Charlotte. You know,
How much can other players initiating open things up for LaMelo Ball? Instead of him having to start and bring the ball up, if someone else has the first pick and roll, someone else has the first pass and cut, and now he gets it on the second side, is that a different LaMelo Ball? Can he attack, tilt the defense? Do we see more of him kind of being able to create havoc offensively? That's kind of what I want to see. And then Brandon Miller, what's your next step? Seen drives, we've seen the shot improve. Can he piece it all together? That's where I'm at.
Okay. I like it. I like it. Who is your breakout candidate or X factor for this group, Steve?
Ooh, well, honestly, it's Trey Mann for me.
Back healthy.
I think his offense could make things interesting for Charlotte. If he can hold up defensively, I think you can play him with a lot of different people. He can create, play on and off ball. So Trey Mann is it for me. Like, I can go con. I'd understand it. Brandon Miller, we know what he can do. I'm going to go Trey Mann. What say you?
Okay. I spoiled it, but like, I think for me, it is just the big room. Like, for Musa Diabate, an absolute monster on the glass, particularly the offensive glass. Like, does he firmly solidify himself as a good, versatile defender? He has the athleticism for it. He has the length for it. Not quite the height, but the length for it at the very least. If he solidifies himself as a legitimate starting center, I think that bodes well for Charlotte. You know, within the rookies, again, if Ryan Kalkbrenner, if he's sturdy enough defensively, if the drop is solid, if he is able to have a little bit more viability on the perimeter, whether that's just recoveries or if they ask him to come closer to the level, then I think he could snatch the starting role somewhat early in Charlotte, honestly, if he's able to nail that portion. Because offensively, the role is very simple. Set really good screens. I think he's going to do that. Finish at the rim, be a lob threat. I think he can absolutely do that. And to your point, like, they do have Mason Plumlee there as kind of a stopgap while the young guys get themselves together and develop. So it's not going to be the end of the world. But I'm looking at the big room. Musa solidifies himself, and Ryan Kalkbrenner really makes a step. I think that helps the entire infrastructure, especially as they're trying to find themselves defensively as a group. That's where I go. What do you think the best lineup is going to be for the Charlotte Hornets this year?
I'm going to give you the same one. You can apply it to both.
Okay.
Let's compete. Give me LaMelo. Give me Colin Sexton. Give me Brandon Miller. Give me Khan. Give me Musa Diabate.
Okay. I like it. Well, I'll run through mine very quickly. Best lineup, I think, is going to be LaMelo Ball, Konkan Ipel, Brandon Miller, Josh Green, Musa Diabate. The lineup I most want to see is LaMelo Ball, Colin Sexton, Konkan Ipel, Brandon Miller, Ryan Kalkbrenner. We got spacing, we got ball handling, we got off-ball movement. Ideally, you get some rim protection from Kalkbrenner, and that's how you do it. But intrigue by the Charlotte Hornets group. I'm glad you brought up Colin Sexton. Also glad you brought up Trey Mann. Some interesting bets in the room. We'll see if they eventually pivot with some late season trades and things as well if things don't go right. But we'll see what happens with Charlotte. And finally, Steve, it is time to talk about the Washington Wizards. Coming off of an 18-64 season, 30th in offense, 28th in defense, 30th in net rating. I am once again excited for the youth. As you are well aware, and as long-term listeners of the Dunker Spot are well aware, very big fan of Bilal Coulibaly, which is also why I haven't wanted to say too much about Bilal Coulibaly in light of what his summer was during other competitions. But I am hoping that he is going to be much better during the regular season, because I am still a believer in the drives and the driving craft. I am still a believer in the defense for him. I think he's going to be very good. So excited to see what this next year of Bilal Coulibaly is going to look like. But beyond that, Bob Carrington, the shot creation, but also some of the subtle playmaking growth that we saw from him as the year went on. The defensive energy was good. I want to see him be more consistent on the end in terms of his assignments, off ball things, things like that. But Bob Carrington is interesting. They drafted Trey Johnson, who is just an absolute bucket. I want to see how he fits in. AJ Johnson, who was quietly the most interesting driver in the league last year once he got real rotation minutes, because you just did not know what was going to happen, but the athleticism pops. Keyshawn George gets after it as a defender. So they just have a lot of guys. And also, as a Chris Middleton fan, certainly doesn't fit in the youth category here, but I want to see a healthy Chris Middleton campaign. Get some old man buckets. You know what I mean? I'm excited for old Chris to put his name back on the map and then be traded to a good team. We'll see what happens on that front, but I want a healthy Chris Middleton season, Steve. What excites you most about this Wizards season?
Improvement. Now, you went through everyone except for CJ McCollum. Very intriguing. we'll make sure we make a note of that.
Okay.
But growth, a lot of opportunities. When you're a team that is young and you're trying to put yourself in a different position, sometimes you need a mixture of old and young. They got a lot of runway for their young guys to continue to improve and play. So you mentioned a whole lot of them, won't belabor it, but they've got a chance to just let these guys grow and develop on both ends of the floor and eventually keep working towards that payoff. So what does Alex Saar look like in year two, having got a taste of year one and having the stretch he did in the second half of the season? What does Bub Carrington do night in, night out? This is a team that wants to compete. If you go back to last year, they were talking to everybody. Hey, what's up? What's good? We here. So how do they get after it? What does Cam Whitmore look like in this environment? Like, they've got an intriguing amount of moxie and youth and bucket getting that could be fun to watch. So I'm intrigued by that part.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Like, I'm glad you brought up just the collective energy and personality of this team, because they are not scared of anyone. I still have, like, that late season Nuggets game in my head. Like, okay, this is a fun group. Like, I think just in general, Brian Keefe has them playing very hard and has since he's, like, taken over as, like, the interim, but now is just the head coach. Like, I'm kind of a fan. Like, I like the way that they play. Yeah, I like how much movement they try to introduce into their half-court offense. A lot of the early setups for them, the setup pick and rolls for them, like, it's a lot of off-ball screens to flow into stuff. Defensively, it's a very help-heavy group. at least it trended that way towards the end of the season. So, like, seeing how these young athletes fit into that and become more keen with the system. I'm glad you brought up Alex Carr, who had a really good, at the very least, a very good rim protecting rookie season last year. And as he found more of himself offensively, well, who does he think he is would probably be my question. And I mean that, like, in a literal sense, not slandering anything like that. But, like, does he see himself as stretch big that can drive? Does he see himself as a more interior-based big that can also spread the floor? Like, what is his process going to be like? How is he coached up? How is he schemed up? How are his touches schemed up? All of that intrigues me with this Wizards group. Biggest question for me, Steve, why have they not had a preseason game yet? Why have we not gotten to see preseason Wizards as we are now like a week into preseason play and we still have to wait until what, Sunday before we finally get to see them? Why? I would love to have like preseason takeaways from the early Wizards and I just don't have that yet. Why do we not have that? But like aside from that mild complaint, it's similar to what you said at the top, like just who pops in this environment, like who is the young guy, second year guy, third year guy that actually goes from a 76 overall to an 82 overall? Like, which guy is it? Would be my general question there. And related to that, how long are the vets going to be here? How long is CJ McCollum going to be a Wizard? How long is Chris Middleton going to be a Wizard? What say you, good sir?
Can you compete? Can you put together 48 minutes? How often can you do it?
Yeah.
It's the Wizards are fun, but we've seen a lot of the Wizards are fun in the first quarter, .. What's the score? .. Oh my. Can we get out of that zone?
Yeah, that made me sad, which quick salute to the Jordan Poole year in as a concept last year. But yeah, I think that's fair. Who's your breakout candidate? Who's your X factor for this group?
Youth. Pick a name out of that.
Youth as a concept.
No, it's Bub Carrington for me.
Okay.
I like that. He feels like the guy.
Okay. I'm between Bilal and Alex Carr in that group, or you can split one as the breakout, one as the X factor. Especially if Alex Carr is actually just an efficient offensive player along with the defense. I think he's just going to be really good defensively. He's already trended that way. But what does the half court fit? What does the non-lob dunk finishing look like for Alex Carr? Can he become like a reasonable finisher around the rim? Because if he does, like obviously the efficiency goes up, but that also just opens up more things for the Wizards in the half court. So we'll see what happens on that front. What do you think the Wizards' best lineup is going to be?
Give me Bub Carrington. Give me CJ McCollum. Give me Corey Kispert. Give me Bilal Coulibaly. Give me Alex Carr.
Okay. We're somewhat aligned. I do think their best lineups are going to be like a vet heavy one. I'm glad you brought the name of Corey Kispert, who is just good, by the way. It's just quietly gotten better at putting the ball on the floor in addition to the shooting. Like the passing is very underrated for him. He's just a good wing. And so it feels weird to call him a vet, so I don't put him into, like, will the Wizards trade him in the same conversation like CJ and Chris? But, like, good teams should at the very least ask about Corey Kispert this year. But my best lineup, CJ McCollum, Corey Kispert, Chris Middleton, Justin Champagne, Alex Carr.
Hold on. Talk about all this youth and that's your best lineup?
I think that's going to be the lineup that performs the best. The group is young. Like, I don't expect them to win their minutes. Obviously, the Wizards would love for them to do so. We're just talking about which group is going to win their minutes. It's probably going to be the one with vets.
Okay. What lineup do you want to see? Oh, my.
Oh, well, the lineup I want to see is let's put all the shooting around Bilal and Carr. Give me CJ McCollum, Bilal Coulibaly, Corey Kispert, Chris Middleton, Alex Carr. And then, you know, secondarily, if we're just going to go all five young players, like, I have, like, four different iterations of that, but we don't have time for that.
Sure don't.
But, yeah, that is where I am at with the Washington Wizards. And that concludes the Southeast Division preview. So, last couple of things. We do have some news items before we end the show.
Couple?
Yeah, just a couple. Just a couple on the injury front. So, one, top of mind. LeBron James to be reevaluated in 3 to 4 weeks and could miss the first 2 to 3 weeks of the season with sciatica, which that is painful. And I hope that he is okay. And I hope that that is not a long-term / lingering thing, because that isn't fun for anyone, particularly someone that puts the amount of strain on his body as LeBron James does. That's tough.
Yeah, it lingers. It lingers.
Yeah.
Enjoy your back while you can, Nikas.
Oh gosh. Well, I will certainly try, but yeah, That's not fun. And so naturally, LeBron set to miss the opener for the first time ever, I think was the report that I saw. It feels weird. Just 20 plus years of opening night or first game of the season, you're going to see LeBron James do something, and now it's just not LeBron. And it's, while I, you know,
it's weird. It's odd. It's uncomfortable a little bit. You know, you get the notification that says LeBron James out for X amount of weeks, could miss opener. Like, what do you mean he's going to miss the opener? Yeah. LeBron never misses the opener. I was like, oh, he'll sit out preseason a little bit, you know, ramp up a little, but now it's a longer ramp up, and now we know why. And so, obviously, we know LeBron is massively great at figuring out ways to recover and invest in his body. But the fact that he just has to ramp it up this early, I mean, maybe it's a long-term deal. I mean, where we just need to make sure LeBron is right and kind of get him on this path towards later, as opposed to LeBron, please help us be good now, and hopefully we can get you to the finish line. And so I think that, I mean, obviously you got Luka Doncic, so, hey, we can literally just let's sit you down, let's get you right, and let's make this work. And we'll see how what that payoff is for the Lakers, because you're not going to be able to lean on the LeBron of it all right now. You're going to have to figure out who you are, and then LeBron will continue on and help you with that.
Yeah, like I think because we got that report, you also saw the JJ Redick comments with him saying LeBron's kind of on his own timeline right now. I'm just like, ooh, I'm a little concerned about that. And obviously some of the complaints about like we haven't gotten to see like Luka plus LeBron plus Ayton plus Reeves, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, hold on. Why are we complaining? I want y'all to look at me right now. What are you complaining about? What are you going to see from that group that you can't imagine? It's Luka Doncic. Hey, pick and roll. Defense reacts. Play is made. What are you missing? Luka in movement, into handoff or pick and roll. Defense reacts. What do you need to see? That man got in great shape. Hey, practice, chill. We'll see you later.
You know, fans want to see the chemistry build, and they want to see what the Luka Ayton pick and roll looks like. They want to see if Ayton's going to roll hard or if he's just going to pop to like 14-foot jumpers. Like, you know, they want to see what it looks like defensively. Like, are these all going to be switches? Like, what, you know, like they want to see some stuff. They want to get some early seeds planted before the regular season gets in. I understand where they're coming from. You know,
guess who's played? DeAndre Ayton.
That's true. He's
done what he's done. Austin Reeves has done what he's done. Jake LaRavia, I don't know what he's been doing, but
I'm gonna need you to give some grace to Jake LaRavia. One last thing on the GM survey. We keep having Luka Doncic get votes at like four different positions, and I need us to finally be honest about what Luka Doncic is at some point.
What do you mean?
Like call him a three and let's just call it a day. But let's just be for real about this. I'm tired of the fake Luka point guard nonsense. The man's a forward that handles the ball all the time. Much like LeBron James has been a forward that handles the ball all the darn time. And I think it's okay to say that. Last thing on the injury front is Rick Carlisle just kind of dropped, hey, TJ McConnell's going to be out probably a month as he recovers from a hamstring injury. And this is with Tyrese Halliburton already being out. But they added DeLon Wright. I added a couple of other point guards, but added DeLon Wright as a depth piece. He gets hurt and scary play for him because he's just bleeding on court after taking a shot to the head. He gets waived. Campaign has now been added to a training camp contract. The Pacers point guard situation, huh? Feels a little bit perilous heading into the year. Like, they do still just have other ball handlers, so it's not like they're completely dead or anything like that, but it's just like, dang, this is a lot of injuries to one position group. And so I'm curious to see what that looks like heading into, like, the regular season.
Look, the Pacers are going to find a way to be the Pacers no matter what. Caitlin Cooper said that, so I believe it. So,
you know.
And number two, Andrew Nembhard still exists. And number three, you know who's excited?
Ooh.
Benedict Mathurin.
Yeah, that brother said, I'm starting. You want me to guard Anthony Edwards? Fine. I'll do that. That's, shoot, man. It's time to get paid. It's time to. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. And with that, thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. We're here every Tuesday and Friday. Come rock with us. You can find me on socials at Nikias NBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties, preseason hoops, some NFL Red Zone on Sundays, but we're talking wrestling and music and food and everything
else. Speed it up!
I'm doing my best, Steve. But anyway, we will be back. I don't know where I'm going to be next week, but we will be back next week with more W Finals talk, more division previews, more fun on the pod. Thank you for listening.